Ladies and gentlemen, it is the afternoon of the fourth weekday in the KSFR Fun Drive, and we are nearing our entire goal. I would like to welcome today the board president of KSFR, Marilyn Mason, and she is going to be board president until, I believe, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And incoming board president, Frank Katz, who is the former city attorney of Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
It's wonderful to have you both, and it's wonderful to have an opportunity to really talk about the state of the station. I've been talking to people because some people were a little bit worried about the press that this station has gotten in the past, and it is my feeling that this station is actually in a stronger state than it has been in the entire time that I've been here, which is over 10 years. It's really 11 or 12 years. What do you guys think?
I agree totally. In fact, I had lunch today with a woman who had facilitated a retreat we did. She said in our last open meeting, she was so impressed with our board. She was so impressed with the strength, the commitment of the board, and their willingness to work together. And I think today, for instance, just as an example, we wanted to have a meeting, but so many of the people were out at the station answering the phones. And what a nice thing to have happen for our board, that they couldn't come to a meeting because they said, well, I don't know, I'm answering phones for 4 hours.
Nice.
So that, I think that says something about we're walking the talk.
Well, and also, this board has really, for the first time in the strength and power that you've been doing it, been raising money so that we can actually shorten our on-air fund drive.
Yeah, I think the key thing about the current board is that it's working closely with staff and with the volunteers, and I think it takes all three to make the station go.
It's a tricky thing when we're on the air because we present all this programming week after week, year after year, and it's the kind of programming that we have really done to give the listeners what they want, but you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and sometimes it's going wonderfully behind the scenes, sometimes it's not going so well, and we try to make it seamless no matter what else is going on. But for somebody like me who's been at the station as long as I have, to feel that kind of security that we're in such a good place as we are now, it's a very lovely and relaxing feeling, I have to say.
And that's so good to hear from you as a staff person, Mary Charlotte, because obviously as a board, we did not know what the inner workings were among the staff members. And I think we as a board certainly feel the connection now. We feel much more of a we. Wouldn't you agree, Frank?
I think definitely so, but I think also our job is to just be the support for the staff. We should, on some levels, be invisible because
yes,
it's the folks who are producing the programs, who are on air, who really count,
yeah.
And we just need to support them and provide the resources and the backup for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are in the KSFR Fund Drive now, and The fact is you guys are doing fundraising behind the scenes, but we also have this wonderful opportunity to really contact our listeners and do fundraising on the air, and that's what we're doing now. So what we're doing is asking people to give a call to 505-428-1393, 428-1393. And in this 5 to 6 o'clock hour, which is the hour that Diego Mulligan had for so many years,
yeah.
We have been taking this week as an added tribute to him and his work, and asking people to call in who were regular listeners to The Journey Home in his name as a tribute to his memory and as a tribute to the good work that he did serving so many people, particularly in the areas of the environment and equality and sustainability and basically social justice.
And indeed, he really left a hole in the programming, Mary Charlotte. So many people have said, what are we going to do now? Diego's not here. Like you, he was a primary anchor for KSFR.
I think the key way that listeners can express what they like on the radio is by contributing during the shows that they listen to and that they appreciate.
We used to have a wonderful board member named Richard Block, who was an old theater person, and he did theater in New Mexico, in Santa Fe. He did theater in, I think it was Louisville. I hope I'm getting that right. But in any case, he would get on the air. And sometimes he was here all day long. He was here from 7 in the morning until 7 at night and got tired and went on the air and told people. But the thing, one of the things that I remember him saying is, he said, it's really like passing the plate in church. We have this institution known as KSFR. It's an entirely voluntary contribution. But basically, if you get spiritual sustenance out of it, but you don't put your quarter in the plate, what's really going on? Now, there are some televangelists who would say that you've got to drain every last penny out of your bank account, and we don't feel that way at all. We feel like everybody should be responsible for their own life, their own finances. But what we'd ask you to do is, if you get spiritual, intellectual, emotional, and just basic news, substance, and sustenance from KSFR, that during the fund drives, which happen about twice a year, you give us a call and make a contribution. It is 428-1393 and 428-1393, and the toll-free number is 866-907-5737, which is also 866-907-KSFR. So if you're calling from out of area or out of the local calling area, you can call that number and make a contribution. And as always, you can have your name read on the air, or you cannot have it read on the air. You can make your contribution in the name of Diego Mulligan, or also the other person who we're paying great tribute to this week is Mary Lou Cook, who passed away a couple of days ago and who was such a true living treasure. She started the Living Treasures program, and she herself became a living treasure and is just such a sorely missed part of this community already, a wonderful person. So 428-1393 is the number. I wondered, Frank, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. You are the new Starting Tomorrow board president of KSFR. How did you get into radio? How did you get into this organization?
Well, I was asked to be on the board by an old friend with whom I'd been on other boards. And so I came on the board just about 2 years ago. And I think it was after a number of board members had resigned and the board was very low. And so it's been a building process over the past 2 years. And we now have, we still, I think, need to fill out some more board places, but we're doing a good job on that. I previously didn't really have any contact with radio other than listening to it. When I became city attorney at the beginning of Mayor Koss's first term, suddenly I began to appreciate just how wonderful the news program on KSFR was, and I began to listen. I love jazz, so I'd always listen to the jazz part, but the news really became much more meaningful to me, and it's, I think, a wonderful resource for the community.
Are you a longtime public radio listener?
Oh, yeah, forever and ever. It's about the only radio I listen to. The only television I watch is the public radio, public television.
428-1393 is the number to give a call. And we are going to set a goal for this hour, and we've been setting a number goal for every hour. And shall we go for $1,000 this hour?
Why not $1,500?
Let's go for $1,500.
What do you think, Frank?
I think that would be great.
Any of you who know Frank Katz out there, do call in. You know the number. Call in now and give your vote of confidence to our new board chair.
Excellent. 428-1393. Now, Marilyn Mason, you are the author of a book called Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal. And this is something you wrote some years ago, but you started mountain climbing relatively late in life, is that right?
Exactly. I was 43 years old. I never thought of it at the time, but for a climber, that's old. It's really old.
And how did you start climbing?
Well, I was teaching in the medical school at the University of Minnesota, and my background, you know, was in psychology, and I was teaching medical residents, and the director of the program there in family practice asked if I would go up to the north shore of Lake Superior and take the physicians up rock climbing. And I said, no, me? I'm not a rock climber. I'm not an outdoor woman. The closest I came to it all was I married a hunter, but I said, I don't do outdoors. And they said, no, you do people. I said, oh, well, that I could do. So they wanted me to facilitate the group in what they would today call EQ, or emotional intelligence. Then we called it affective education for physicians. And so we went up to the North Shore, and I was blown away. As a psychologist, as a therapist, I thought, all our words, how we can lie. your body never lies. If you're on a rock cliff over Lake Superior that doesn't return its dead, and your knees are your legs shaking, you know, both your legs like a sewing machine needle, tears cheering down your face, you face a part of yourself and you become exposed and vulnerable in a way I had never seen. Yes, you see some of it in the therapy room, but not to that degree so immediately. And of course, all these docs had very high IQ, but very low EQ. And to see them come forward with their feelings was absolutely amazing. And having them face their fears and face their tears in a safe environment changed me totally. I had to face my own self there because I too had to climb. I thought if I'm going to work with them, I need to know the process. And so there I was at 43, rappelling over Lake Superior, wondering what on earth I was doing there. And I was very frightened, I was very fearful, I was filled with tears, and they said, Marilyn, you did all the bouldering, you know the rocks. I said, yes. They said, do you trust your belayer, the one anchoring me? I said, oh, yes. They said, well, what is it? And I blubbered out and said, I'm afraid I won't achieve. I had never even looked at myself as an achiever, ever. But it just bubbled up. And where can you get that truth that quickly?
Right. Now, you were, this first group was a group of doctors, which,
yeah,
as you said, had high IQs but not as much emotional intelligence. Did they also get helped by that?
Oh, my. They said they learned it more in 2.5 days on the rocks than in 2.5 years of psychotherapy. I mean, it was life-changing for so many.
Do you think they took that into their practices
as
doctors?
Oh, I know they did. I know they did because I stayed in touch. In fact, out of that was born a company that I took later on my own, but we called it the Experiential Learning Institute, taking groups up rock climbing and then rafting. And I used a lot of Outward Bound instructors. But yes, indeed, it was life-changing. And it changed their interpersonal style. And I just became more courageous then in teaching them the communication styles in the training I was doing, in the teaching in the medical school. So it was a win-win.
So we're talking about the book Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal. This book, by the way, can be yours if you want to make a contribution, and we hope you do, to KSFR right now. This hour and only this hour, you can get a copy of this book by calling 505-428-1393, 428-1393. And what's interesting is when you talk about Seven Mountains, which is the title of the book, the chapters in this book are things like commitment, the inner climb, fear, facing our edges, trust, the covenant, and it goes on from there. And going from commitment to fear to support to endurance and so on, it's like as you mature as a climber, each of those stages is kind of a metaphor for the maturity that you are going through as a human being.
Absolutely, Mary Charlotte. I call it the life climb. The reason I wrote the book was I realized how the ethos of commitment was changing in our culture. I heard a young friend say, oh, I'll commit at least to lunchtime. And then we looked at Manpower Temporaries being the largest employer in America. And we still see that today. And we see young professionals today will now have probably 7 careers in a lifetime. Well, the people who did the gold watch business are probably out of business because people are not staying that long.
Well, and it's a two-way street because, I mean, people can make a commitment to a company, but the company won't make a commitment to them.
Exactly, and that's what happened. And I grew up in an era, I call myself a 50s woman, when commitment meant blind obedience, give yourself over no matter what. Commitment comes from the word metere in the Latin, to give yourself over, and oh, did we, especially as women. You know, that was what I was taught. Well, then with this changing ethos and the new relationship, many articles stated, the new relationship, the uncommitted, and people started living together and they didn't marry. And with the changing divorce rate, I thought, oh, well, maybe that's good. 50% divorce rate, higher on second marriages. What happened to this until life was due part? So I saw this changing ethos of commitment. So I wrote the book as more about what does it take to have an I and thou in a committed relationship. It's not just me turning myself over to you or to an organization, a job, whatever, but it's in relationship, and it's I, thou.
It's interesting because as I was reading the book, I was kind of reminded of the generation that came before me, your generation, that had to go through actually evaluating, and particularly as women, what happens when I'm in a really not even necessarily a bad marriage per se, but a marriage that doesn't let me be myself. It doesn't let me be who I am. And the whole idea of commitment, a lot of the time it's like, well, that's just tough luck. You're in something that's bigger than you are. And so what is this be yourself nonsense?
Yes.
But at the same time, part of feminism is actually making a commitment to yourself. And sometimes the commitment to yourself and the marriage don't match up.
Exactly. That's it. I remember going to see an attorney, and he reminded me that I had married my college sweetheart. And after all, what was I expecting? And I thought, that's right. I have two children. I have a good life. Go home and be the good wife. I committed, after all. That's what commitment is. And so climbing taught me so much about, especially through down climbing, that all commitments will end sometime. And it's when you do say, I'm going to be committed to me and to what matters in my life, that I'm going to be a much better person in any relationship, as a friend, as a lover, as a parent. I mean, when you know yourself, that's the big job. I mean, that to know yourself.
The number is 428-1393. I get a little message from the control room that the phones are ringing, and we're delighted to hear that. And we want to make sure that you know the number to call to get a copy of this wonderful book, which is called Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal by Marilyn Mason, outgoing board president of KSFR. It's been just such a delight getting to know you, Marilyn, and having you on the board and as part of the KSFR community.
And it's been an honor for me to be a part of it all, and I'm excited to be on your program. And it's been wonderful to get to know you, Mary Charlotte. I always admired you from afar, and I can admire you up close.
Thank you. You just said a moment ago something about down climbing, and I think when people think about the metaphor of mountain climbing, especially people who haven't done it much, like me, you think about the journey upward and reaching the summit and all of that.
Oh.
But then the other half of the journey is going back down. And yeah, gravity helps you in some ways, but it's tough to go down too.
I would say to anyone, I think you learn more from a down climb in life than any climb you will ever do. And from my experience, it was out in Wyoming, and I decided I was going to climb Devil's Tower, which is a 5,100-foot rock monolith that just rises out of the earth. The Indians believe it to be sacred. It's a beautiful rock monolith. And my friends who were Outward Bound instructors said, Marilyn, you could do this, but it'll be the toughest day of your life. You've got to be committed to the climb. And I said, oh, I commit. I'll do that. So there I was out in Wyoming. I was probably 44 or 5 at the time, and sleeping in the grasses, terrified. And the next morning, by the time we bouldered up 300 feet, I looked up at these spires, these tall spires. I thought, what am I doing here? And I was chewing gum to keep my mouth saliva. And all of a sudden, my mouth glued shut. I call it fear glue. Tears streaming down my face. I finally made the first pitch of the climb. And my belayer leaned down, said, Marilyn, next pitch is twice as hard. And there are 7 pitches to that climb. And I looked up at him, and I realized, I said, I have to down climb. I need to be lowered. The tears, the self-hate, the anger, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm a woman, what am I doing here? It just all flooded me. And then my foot hit a rock. I thought, oh, my other foot hit the other rock. And I thought, oh, I'm standing on something solid. I just made the wisest decision in my adulthood. And By going down, and it was painful to face that I couldn't achieve. And I think any one of us who's had a life down climb, I was too old. I should have had a down climb sooner. But anyway, I've been fortunate I hadn't had a major down climb until then. And that was major for me. But the lesson in leadership and in life, in having a down climb, if you don't fail, how are you going to learn?
Now, there was one mountain, I don't know if it was this one or a different one, where one year you tried and just couldn't do it, and then I guess it was about a year later, you went back and said, I'm going to try again. Was it the same one?
Same one.
And you did it.
And my friends brought me flowers and left them at my door. They said, we love you no matter what the outcome is. And my friend Will Steger, he's a National Geographic climber, Will showed up with all these jumars, these pieces of webbing. And I said, you're going to build me a ladder up the rock? He said, no, I know you can do it. And I didn't have anyone with me. I did it for me. Just to know that I could, because I had started doing push-ups. And pretty soon I was up to 100 a day, because at first I could only do one. And you need your upper body for climbing. And I was so pleased, but it was for me. It wasn't to prove to anyone else. But I needed to know that if I got ready for the climb, and a lot of times we're not ready for the commitments we make. And it's so important. So the metaphor to me has really guided my life, Mary Charlotte.
We're talking to Marilyn Mason. The book is called Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal, which, again, the book can be yours, and, excuse me one moment, the book can be yours if you give a call to 505-428-1393, 428-1393. So you are a psychotherapist. You spent many years, mm-hmm. You were a psychotherapist, you spent many years of your life doing this kind of work, and as you say, climbing is a metaphor for psychotherapy and for some of the challenges that we go through in our relationships and in our work and with our children and our parents and our spouses and so on. Those work for you once you've started climbing and you're the psychotherapist, but for somebody who's not a climber and they're your patient or your client, can you still use those metaphors with them?
Oh, absolutely. I used to refer to myself as a wilderness guide. You know, if you're looking at the challenges you face ahead, if you translate that into the mountains you're going to climb and what you have to face in life, whether it's a new career, whether it's a new relationship, it's one of the easiest. You know, there are very few metaphors that we use. The poets use the trees, the waters, and the mountains are a very natural metaphor for many of us. So to look at what is needed for the commitment, that's the inner climb. The hardbound copy of this book was called Seven Mountains, The Inner Climb to Commitment and Caring. And it is that inner climb that it's all about, and it's very transferable, I found. And the language is one that people can readily accept and understand. Frank's nodding. I mean, do you agree? I mean,
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that it is, life is a climb. And you know what I learned from children? Oh my God, it was wonderful. We did a lot of family climbing trips. Family said they had never been so close. We'd take them to the Black Hills. And these little 7 and 8 year olds and up to 10 year olds, they'd start up the rock and they didn't use willpower. They would start climbing and they said, oh, it looks like this isn't working. I'll try something else. Not us. We would hand jam, knee jam. We are going to conquer this. Our willpower got in the way. The children aren't crowded with their egos yet. They don't have any ego investment, and they're so successful. They just nimbly climb up the rocks. And I remember one of my professors once from my department, I was working on my doctorate, came on. He was so curious to see what I was doing. And he said, throw me a concept. I said, a concept will never take you up a rock, but your spirit will. And I mean, it's just amazing how vivid it becomes for anyone. I've taken felons out. I've taken such a myriad of groups out. They get the metaphor in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I have to say, when I was reading it, and I don't like physical challenges. it's not something that I seek out. I feel like life is already so full of challenges that putting yourself in a position where you could die or get hurt on purpose and paying good money to do so is a mark of near insanity.
Some have said that to me.
And
Frank
also,
is nodding.
And I also feel like, you know, as a person of, you know, primarily urban person of civilization, it's like we figured out ways to make houses warm and secure from the elements. So why not sleep in them? But, you know, this is something, and I was thinking, you know, I imagine that this, in a way, is a response of, you know, privileged white people to being over-sheltered, in a way.
That's a really good point. I typically used to take people who didn't have the means on scholarships on my trips, but I never told anyone. You know, they just joined in and no one knew who paid, because it does cost money, especially my cross-cultural treks. They're very costly. Not that I'm making the money, but
yeah,
just,
you're going to Nepal, you're going to
Tibet, Bhutan, I mean, China. But it is, who can afford to do that? So part of my philosophy has always been to include some who couldn't. And some people have said, look, the metaphor for me is in the jungle of New York City. But it's still the metaphor. they still have to face those challenges of trust, support. You know, how are you going to get that in your life? That's what matters. It doesn't have to be in the outer doors. But for a lot of the corporate people I've worked with who have been very sheltered, this was life-changing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, if you have been sheltered and if you've had everything handed to you, and you haven't had, life hasn't given you those challenges, then you'd want to seek them out.
Exactly. And you know why Outward Bound was born? Outward Bound was born because they found in World War II that a lot of the servicemen were not able to survive. And you know who were surviving? The old salts. The guys who had lived life and faced life. And so they developed this course. The Outward Bound School started in England, because they wanted people to learn to find the parts of themselves. And that's what happens. It is so exciting to see people. I had women on women's climbing trips who would frame their torn jeans. They were so proud that they had summited, that they had taken the risk, and they were dirty and the fingers, nails broken and scabby knees, and they wore them with pride. And that is life-changing for many people.
We're talking about the book Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal by Marilyn Mason. You can get a copy of this book, ladies and gentlemen, and we are on our way, but not very far on our way, to our $1,500 goal for this hour. So let's get the phones ringing, 428-1393. And you wrote this book, Marilyn, what, 15 years ago or so?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and it has been something, not only, I would think, the experience of being a climber, but the experience of putting the lessons down in this book really have made a difference in your own journey.
Oh, absolutely. By writing it, I had to face so many parts of myself. One example, big learning for me, was the chapter on support. I had grown up in a British-American family, both sides. You're not supposed to ask for support. I'll never forget what my granddaughter said, "Amma, can you help me with this?" I thought, where did she learn that? Not from my family side. And the editor said, "Marilyn, why is this chapter so skinny? You know, what's that about?" And I said, "I don't know." She said, "How do you ask for support?" I, "Huh? How do you ask for support?" "I don't know." So it was just so awakening for me to face myself through writing, which I think is why I write books. I don't write for money. I don't, you know, if they sell, that's good. But more is the message that I feel that I have to share that might be other people's experience as well. I mean, I'm not a metaphor for humanhood, but I think a lot of us face those same challenges and having a hard time asking for support and not seeing it as being weak. And I must say, it's still, I've grown a lot because of that chapter. I've had to learn, especially as I'm older, have health issues, I've had to ask for support.
The number is 428-1393, and you can get a copy of this book by calling that number. The number from out of area is 866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. And we're going to take just a little break right now to get a report from the control room. If Nick is there.
Yeah. How you doing?
Hey, Nick. So we've got people calling in?
That's correct. Yeah, we've had a really good, steady stream of calls. The phones are all open right now.
That means that people can call.
That's right. You finally can. If you waited till now, now's the time.
428-1393. Do we have any thank yous that we'd like
to
give out?
Yes. Let's start with our friend Anonymous.
Yes.
Matt Shepman.
Thank you, Matt.
Elizabeth West.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
I believe she was on your show recently.
Yeah. She's awesome.
What was the name of that book?
She's an author herself.
Right.
It was on the Sherman. History of Santa Fe. Anyway,
right.
Go ahead.
Okay. And Anon from Jules Works. Jules Works, yes.
Excellent.
That was the name of business. That's it so far.
All right. Well, let's keep those phones ringing, 428-1393, 428-1393. On the subject of support and standing alone and doing it all yourself and that sort of what you, Marilyn, called the kind of British way of doing it, I can't remember what the exact context was, but I read once a story about how some, you know, Westerners go to a completely different culture that was much more of a communal culture, and they try to test the young people in, I think it was math skills. And so they give them all the tests, and they've all got their pencils. And so all the kids get together and say, okay, let's get to, how do we do number one? How do we do number two? And they're like, no, you're supposed to do it yourself. And the kids looked at the teacher and said, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. Why would we do it ourselves? And that so struck me as a fundamental cultural difference. And you think, you know, these people, we might be better at empire, but they're better at solving problems.
Oh, I have a wonderful story. Do we have time for that? I was working with the African Fulbright Scholars. This was just 2 years ago. And I had been working with them a couple years on leadership. And these are Fulbright Scholars from all over Africa, 20 different countries in Africa. And so in my leadership training, I often will ask people to form small groups. You write down individually the person you most admire as a leader. Who do you think is the greatest leader you've ever known? So you write that down individually, and then in the group, you pick one that is going to report out. Now, I've done this with corporate groups. I've done this with a myriad of women's groups. It doesn't matter. I've always used the same model in America, that they will pick one person then, because we don't have time for all. They choose one person, stands up and says, this is the person that I have chosen and the group supports me. Well, I tried this with the Fulbright Scholars. And so I said, okay, the first group now report out. And I said, you know, choose your leader, maybe from your village, from your clan, whatever. Maybe it's Nelson Mandela, whatever. But choose the leader that you think is the most ethical and the one you regard the highest. And so I said, well, the first group, please report out. All five women stood up together. And I said, oh, my God, I think you're teaching me something here right now. I said, talk about cultural difference. I said, thank you so much. They described the characteristics, the qualities of this leader, but no one ever took individual credit. Right. And it was so, I just cherish that. And you're so right about cross-cultural. I mean, it is so alive, and we have so much to learn. I worked with the Tibetans for many years, who were refugees and came to Minnesota. And the same thing held true. If we thought Frank would be a good president, someone would say, Frank would say, well, but maybe Sue Ann would rather be. Let's see how she feels about that. I mean, it's always done in a circle with other people. It's not, there's no ego eye standing out. Houston Smith was one of my mentors, the theologian. He said, the only time you're aware of the eye is when there's something wrong with it. And that, I think, is so profound, and it's so American, because we get so focused on the I, we forget we live in we.
Yeah, yeah. 428-1393 is the number, and you can get a copy of this marvelous book, which was really fun to read because, it's a wonderful book to read and really fun because not only are there just, you know, I mean, edge of your seat stories about being up on these mountains, and I, you know, I'm so glad that I have a couch to sit on and get to read it instead of having to do it myself. but then you talk about how you take each one of these things into your psychotherapy practice, and when
and
you
consulting.
Were
consulting, yeah,
and consulting, and while you were doing this, I mean, it was still a period where a lot of people were facing that kind of tension between the traditional marriage and working together but being really different people and being able to be autonomous within a marriage or getting out of it. And when you come across some of these stories, like a woman who is finding herself and finding her own way and gets into Eastern spirituality, and her husband is a corporate executive and she shows up at one of his functions wearing a sari and painted orange toenails in her sandals with her hair flowing free and smelling like body odor and patchouli oil, and he's mortified and furious, and she's like, well, got to be myself. How do you get under that? I mean, you're faced with some other person, people's life situation, and it's, I mean, what do you do?
Well, it took a while with that couple, especially. They're still together very happily. I must say, I think it was their 50th wedding anniversary. They called me. They were at the Inn of the Anasazi, and he surprised her. And their children. He had had the children fly in, and they serenaded them from downstairs on the street. He took her to the balcony, but it took a lot of work. What does love mean? What I have found in working with people, when I used to work with couples especially, if you really love someone, if it really matters, say something mattered to you, Frank, and it's a 10 to you, and Consi knew that, she would say, okay, Frank, we'll go with it. And if you knew something's a 10 to Consi, you say you'd go with it. The most successful relationships do that. This guy turned vegetarian for quite a while because his wife
for her.
Because his wife became the greatest vegetarian cook in the Twin Cities. But he was so delighted when he had a physical checkup and they said, you need more protein. He was thrilled. But they worked through it all, and they did a recommitment ceremony and had a remarriage. Did he become Buddhist? No. No. But does he respect a spiritual path? He became involved in a group of corporate executives who are together still today in the Twin Cities, who get together and talk about their spiritual growth. And, I mean, I look at that as they had the courage to come in and face their problems and talk openly about them in the therapy room. And it was, I consider that a privilege, because once you hear someone's story, you can have compassion and you can help guide the way.
4281393 is the number, and we are very, very slowly creeping toward our goal, but we're not even close. So, you want to give a little shout out to our listeners, Marilyn?
Yeah. What do I have to say? Here's what I want to say: is for you listening, know what it takes to make KSFR hum like it does. For us to be able to have a Mary Charlotte, for us to be able to carry the BBC News, for us to carry the quality of programming we have every day of the week on the air, we need funding. It costs us, because we don't take paid political advertising. Bill Moyers was so proud of us that he mentioned it on his show at one time, that KSFR in Santa Fe does not take any paid political advertising. We could do that, folks, and take you all off the hook, but we're not going to do that, because we know you are people who believe in democracy. People who believe in democracy want community-based public radio, and that's why Frank and I are both involved, is that we know it's the voice of the people that matters. Our producers know that. Our staff, I mean, Mary Charlotte could be working in a myriad of places. She would have a lot of choices, but she's committed to KSFR public radio. So toward that end, I think we have a responsibility as listeners. It doesn't come cheap, but you could easily do it by pledging online. You can go and call in and be a sustaining member for X numbers of dollars a month, and you'd be surprised. $10 a month, it's a $120 pledge. You may say, I don't have $120. I bet you have $10 a month.
That's right. And I do that with various organizations, including media organizations and environmental organizations. And it's easy to do, and it makes a huge difference for us. We're talking to Marilyn Mason, and new board president Frank Katz has been sitting here very quietly. You want to make a shout out to our listeners?
Yeah, I think about how people will drive downtown or go shopping or do something every day, and they'll put four quarters in the parking meter for an hour of parking. And if you would put four quarters in the KSFR radio meter every day, boy, would that be a help. I think we need a dollar a day club here for folks to, you know, put your money in the meter so that the radio can go on. But actually, really, the wonderful thing about KSFR, I talk to people all the time, they say they listen to the radio. We assume you're out there, but, you know, this is the time to let us know that you are out there. And you don't need to contribute a lot of money. I think they're not that many people out there who couldn't afford a $25 contribution. And we need that show of support. We need the money, of course, but we also need the support from the community to know that you're there and that you care about KSFR.
4281393 is the number, 4281393. And we know that between 5 and 6, a lot of people are driving home. So if you're driving right now, just take a moment and pull over. If you are on a street that has any kind of shoulder, just pull right over and take out your cell phone, if you've got a cell phone, and call 4281393. And if you're already home, or if you're just about to get out of the car, remember that number from your driveway into your front door to the phone and call 505 428 1393. We were trying for a $1,500 goal for this hour. Not sure whether we're going to make it or not, but let's at least do the very best we can. And if we can make even half or three quarters of that, we will be very, very happy. 428-1393. And you can get a copy of this wonderful book called Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal by Marilyn Mason.
Could I say something? Because I think anyone now who's contributing, I would ask the question, do you believe in democracy? If you believe in democracy, what will you put on the table? Because right now, with what's going on in Congress, we look at the rate of approval for Congress, it's 5%. And I don't care which political side you're on, but it's pretty discouraging.
There was a guy who got on TV, it was last night or the night before, in Congress. Must have been a congressman. And he pulled out a survey that said, we have compared the approval ratings of Congress and of dog poo.
Yes.
And dog poo.
Cockroaches.
Oh, well, this guy said dog poo, yeah.
Yeah.
And dog poo came out higher. Yeah, cockroaches, dog poo, and Congress.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is the thing. We don't do paid political advertising. However, we do have real news about the election. So every time there's a city council election or a mayoral election or sometimes even a school board election, we get those candidates on the air so that you can hear what they sound like and make real decisions. And it's one thing to have the forums and the newspaper, and those are great too. But when you actually hear how somebody puts together sentences and how they think on their feet, you can hear that on the radio, and that's absolutely the best medium, I think, to get to know a person, and that helps us make a decision, and that's a lot of what democracy is about, is voting for our elected representatives.
And it's one of the few opportunities I think we have now, because I think we listen to the news or you look at the television and you say, what can I do? What can I do? Well, give money to KSFR. That's symbolic of my belief in democracy. If I can give something or get others to give, then I know that it's a vote for democracy. And it's up to us. It's up to the people of America to say, you can call it a republic or call it a democracy, whatever you're stretching for democracy. But let us put our money where our mouth is. If we really believe in it, let us support it.
428-1393. An informed population is essential to democracy. If you're leading people astray or giving them disinformation or misinformation or propaganda, then they can vote, but it's still not really a democracy.
And what's good is, for instance, as Vanessa pointed out today, that when we get the BBC, it's not the British BBC. We get the BBC with pretty cultivated, really intellectually strong news from the BBC that is based for Americans. And it's so basic and it's so unbiased and fair that I think it's a real privilege that we can say, we have the BBC. That's one of the first things I say to people. Or we have Bill Moyers.
One of the reasons that we got the BBC, one of the main reasons we got the BBC was 10 years ago during the run-up to the war in Iraq, when George Bush was president, all this cheerleading was going on in virtually all the American media, including NPR. There was a real call for, a really strong call within Santa Fe for radio news that wasn't cheerleading, that had some other perspectives in it. And, you know, we've seen this analyzed in a number of different places, but in the corporate media, it was something like, for every 400 voices talking about the war, 396 of them were for the war and 4 voices were against it, whereas the population was divided about 50-50.
Wow.
So the news really did not represent the people at all, and we've been trying to kind of rectify that by giving, first of all, an international perspective, like what does the rest of the world think about us? Like, I'm sure the rest of the world right now, I know the rest of the world right now is looking at us saying, are these Americans nuts? They can't even keep their government open. It's a hostage situation. And we need foreign perspectives on our own government and on our own life. The BBC provided that. We gave it to the community. They asked for it. And they loved it. And we've been so happy with the response that we've gotten from the BBC. And I have to say, I listen to the BBC every day, and I sometimes read the BBC online and read The Guardian online, which has a U.S. edition, which is not all that different from the British edition. Yeah. Sometimes I read them both. And this is an incredibly important way to stay informed.
Yeah.
428-1393. The phones have been ringing, and they've been... We don't have numbers yet, but that's okay. We've got 10 minutes left, actually 9 minutes left in this program. So let's go out with a bang. 428-1393. There's a chapter in your book, Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal, Marilyn Mason, called Endurance. And I think that's a very important chapter, because whatever you do and whatever you make a commitment to, it can be very heady and exciting at the beginning. But the hard part is enduring and staying with it. When it's hard, when it's boring, when it's cold, when it's tiresome.
And when you really see someone. It takes time, doesn't it? And you can see someone and love them anyway. One of the book titles I was playing with for a while was Crucial Choices. How do you know when to stay in or get out? And my friends were all excited about that. They thought I would have the God's gift to their relationship issues. But it is staying with the experience and hanging in for the hard part. And as you know, in anything, whether it's in your work life, whether it's in your personal love life, any relationship, friendship, people grow at different stages in different ways, and it isn't parallel. Wouldn't it be nice if it were? Probably boring, too. I have a friend who said my parents died of marriage. I mean, they did it so evenly that he said he thinks they died of marriage. But when you look at endurance, it means that you're willing to go on and hang in for that hard part. And that's the time that really takes that inner core and that part of you who really says, I am committed to me and to the life climb and to the other, whether it's my job, whether it's a relationship. But to do it without you, with, you know, your values are here within you. And that's the place where meaning grows. And when you know what life means to you, then you can endure. When you read stories of endurance, I don't know if you ever read the book Unbroken. They're making a movie of it. These were World War II young guys, 20, 22 years old in the service, the Japanese torture, etc. It's a marvelous book. The woman who wrote Seabiscuit wrote the book. It's fabulous. But it's a story of endurance. And so often, when we're in a climb, a life climb, we reach the point where we say, you know what? I could get out of here. Maybe I should get out of here. My friends are all getting out. Why don't I? And just do what I want to do. Then there's so many people to consider, so many in the context that you have to consider. And it means you're going to take a risk to stay in. And it may work and it may not. Maybe you hang in for another 10 years and say, well, now it's time to get out. But I endured. And those friends of mine came out to see a climbing trip I was doing in the Black Hills. And they've been married a long time now, 60 years now. But they were standing there, and my friend said, Howard, look at those little rocks. Look at the little dainty flowers growing out of that hard, hard rock. She said, isn't that tenacity? Isn't that endurance? And he said, no. He put his arm around it. He said, no. Me standing here with you, that is tenacity. That is endurance after 40 years. And so it is. It's hanging in, and they've hung in.
Very, very interesting. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. Marilyn, you said to me recently that you have the great fortune of having done all the things that you would have ever hoped to do in your life, you know, that idea of the bucket list. Your bucket is empty. You've done it. That must be a wonderful feeling.
It is. It is. And I do feel that. I've also made, one of my mentors said to me once, how will you manage your disappointments? One of my disappointments is I'm never going to be a whiz at languages. I'm just not. I love languages, but I'll never be a whiz at it. So I took it out of the bucket. I mean, why have something there that's not achievable? But in terms of the richness of life and having a full life that's been filled with adventure and love, family and friends, I don't have, sure, there's always more places to see and visit, or books to read, languages to learn, but I don't have a yearning for that. I feel so full.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's a beautiful book, Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal. Thank you so much for talking about the book on the air with us.
Well, it was a pleasure. I forgot so much of it. The stories just kind of came back. I mean, I guess they're in me.
Right. Now, we've got, 4 minutes left, and I think we've got a little report from the control room.
That's right.
Okay, good.
We've got a couple people to thank.
Okay.
We've got Joni Martin.
Thank you, Joni.
Nora Fisher.
Thank you.
And Janet, who loves Mary Charlotte.
Thank you so much.
She's also very fond of Zuby and David, especially for their support of Tewa Women.
Yay. Good. Thank you so much. And keep those phones ringing because we've got another, I think, 3.5 minutes until the top of the hour, at which time we go to the BBC and the news and lots of other stuff coming up. This is the BBC for a half an hour at 6 o'clock. Is that right, Nick?
That's correct. We'll start off with the BBC until 6:30 and then Living Juicy at 6:30.
Right. Wonderful. Well, I want to thank Nick. Nick is a fabulous member of the KSFR staff, and he does such a great job, and he does it with such grace and ease. It's great to have so many people on the staff who are just such excellent professionals and don't draw attention to themselves and just do such a wonderful job.
That impressed me when we recently had a joint gathering at George Weston's house. He invited the board and the staff. And that group of the staff are just so natural and so approachable. I mean, there isn't, I don't think there's a big ego in the group. I mean, it really was impressive to me to see how friendly they were, how approachable they were, and the kind of staff I would expect, actually, for KSFR. Real people doing real work with real meaning.
We are all people who chose to go into essentially public service because this is a nonprofit. We do nonprofit work, and we do work that is serving the public and trying to do it and having a wonderful time doing it and be informative as we're doing it and basically bring people the best radio that we are capable of doing. And it's such a nice combination of a nonprofit organization and a volunteer organization because so many of the people who are on the air are volunteers and they come in once a week and they come in year after year after year and do wonderful shows and the shows get better and they learn from doing radio. So 428-1393 is the number. Please call.
I have a question. If people are driving and they don't get to pull over, maybe they're an I-25 or something and it's hard to pull over, could they call in when the show is over and say, look, I was listening, but I was driving. Can I still get a copy of the book?
Yes. Shall we extend it to 6:30?
Well, it's all right with me. Because if they're driving and can't get to the phone, I've got the books available and they're welcome to them.
Excellent. So we're going to check in with Nick, and if he gives us the okay, then this book will be available until 6:30. Absolutely. Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from a Climber's Journal. So thank you so much, Marilyn Mason, outgoing KSFR board president, for being with us this hour. And thank you, Frank Katz, incoming KSFR board president, for being with us as well. And we look forward to having both of you around for so much time to come. And we thank our listeners for supporting this wonderful community resource, this beacon of democracy in a crazy, crazy world. 428-1393 is the number. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafemc. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org, and we're also on Twitter at radiocafemc, although I don't tweet all the time. I know I'm supposed to anyway. Stay tuned for the BBC, and please continue to call 428-1393 and get a copy of this book by Marilyn Mason, Seven Mountains, Life Lessons from the Climber's Journal. I will be in tomorrow morning for the Santa Fe Radio Cafe at 8 o'clock with Robert Knott. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you then. Hasta la vista.